moaning in the recording.
She snores.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
But she loves touching like that. So, Ed, how have you been doing?
I'm doing good. All right, we're taking this recording at Bob Plooster's house. Bob has been a native of Boyne City for more years than I have. I've got Robin Berry here with me, and this is Ed May, and this is Sunday, and what's the date?
April 2nd.
This is April 2nd, so we're just past April Fool's Day. And this is an interview just to discuss with Bob what his memory of Boyne is, and answer any questions, go back and forth in conversation. Bob, were you born in Boyne?
No, I was born in Chicago. I'm not proud of that, but that's the way it happened. But I was about 12 years old when we moved up to the Holland, Michigan area. And after I graduated high school, I went to Hope College in Holland. And after a year and a half, I ran out of money. They hadn't invented student loans yet. If you didn't have money, you would go find a job. You're done in school. Well, I found a job with Lear in Grand Rapids as a draftsman. I'd always done drafting work and excelled in that in high school and loved doing it. And when I went to work for Lear, in the front page of their personnel policy in 3-inch-high letters was a statement, 2 years on the job equals 1 year of college. Old man Bill Lear, who later came up with the Lear jet, and during the war he came up with the autopilot, some really important aeronautical things. He'd never gone past the fifth grade, so he wasn't too impressed with diplomas. So he had this policy, you know, but also the other part of the policy that really helped is they would reimburse your tuition. If you wanted to take any night classes, any correspondence work, which I did, I took advantage of all of that. I was living in Holland and commuting to the Grand Rapids, and I had a lot of riding time. I was in a carpool where I only drove one day a week, and the other 4 days I sat in the back seat and read all the books about engineering. and their attitude was, when you got to the 5-year point, sink or swim. If you could do the work, you could have the job. And I proved that I could do the work. And at that point, they moved me from a drawing table to a desk. And very shortly after that, like within a month or two, I had a written contact with Honeywell down here. They were called Corder in those days, and that was 1959. It made me a good offer, and we moved up and been here ever since. But I think it was after 5 years of moving around a little bit through town that we built this house in 1963. So anyhow, that all of a sudden I am an engineer. Don't have a diploma, but I could do the work. And I worked my way up through Honeywell to the point where I no longer reported to the chief engineer. I was a program manager, and I reported only to the plant manager. And after 10 years, it got pretty stressful. I had a lot of responsibility, and I had a chance one evening visiting with a neighbor fellow here. We were out raking in the spring and stopped to smoke our pipes. And he said, boy, he said, you know where I can find a draftsman? I need somebody to draw house plans, and we're in a mess. We don't know how many doorknobs we got, how many green shingles, and we're shipping out a house a week, and we just really, really need help. So he made me an offer. I quit down at Honeywell and went to work, and I was there 4 years. And in the process of that, as a designer and a purchasing agent, my biggest headache were countertops. They came from Saginaw. They rode on 3 semis. By the time they got to Boyne Falls, 40% came through damage. It took 6 weeks to get them to begin with. It took another 6 weeks to replace them. In the meantime, the builders ticked off. The plumbers ticked off. You know, the owners ticked off. Everybody is bent out of shape because they can't finish the job till they get. So I started in my basement, just out of self-defense, building a few countertops. And as we say, pretty soon my toadstool business is mushrooming. So anyhow, then I quit there and went into this full time, and it's been over 40 years I've been building countertops. So.
Well, I had the privilege of helping Bob in one or two jobs, and he gave me a piece of advice that I remembered and I've used for the rest of my life. Measure twice and cut once.
Yes.
And every time I pick up a tape measure, I think of you. It's been years, but that's quite true.
Yep.
It saved me a lot of mistakes.
I think that came from my shop teacher, but anyhow.
Yep. I can always cut some off, but I can't grow it back on.
No kidding. Good advice.
So anyhow, that's kind of my story, how we got to this point. The 10 years I spent at Honeywell were some real excitement at times and, you know, hairy situations. I remember one time the company pilot and I went to Cleveland. And I had to see a casting vendor, and we got there late in the day, tied up at a little Cuyahoga County Airport, and found a motel and got a rental car and so on. And the next morning I went, took care of my business. I came back and tried to rouse the pilot, and he was quite hungover. He had had a big night the night before with some girl in the piano bar. And he said, "Let's stay another night." I said, "No, I've got all kinds of work to do. I can't hang around here and kill the day. We got to go." So I got him in the coffee shop, got coffee in him, and we get out to the airport, and we took off, and we got out over Lake Erie, and he said, "You take over," and he climbed in the back seat and curled up on the bench seat, and it's pretty easy, you know, once he gets a heading and altitude, you just maintain it. It's kind of a no-brainer. And he said, "When you see Houghton Lake, wake me up." And you can recognize that as the biggest lake in the middle of the state, you know. So pretty soon we get out over the lake and I can't see land anywhere. And I poked him and I said, "Have we got life jackets in this thing?" And he said, "Look in the glove box." And I opened it up. It was a Playboy magazine. That's all it was. So... But I did wake him up when we saw Houghton Lake, and he brought us in safely, and So
what was Boyne like when you grew up, and as you got older in town?
Yeah, a lot of changes. A lot of changes. The condos, of course, the Landings condos down there, and later on, I turned out doing a lot of countertop work and refacing work, and they turned out to get several paychecks out of that project. You know, I didn't like what it did aesthetically to the looks of this end of the lake, because previously I had gone along that shoreline with a pair of hip boots and a fly rod in the evenings and catching pretty nice bluegills, and came carrying a stringer with me, and we had enough for supper quite often. But yeah, the fishing was always interesting. I can remember when I first started at Honeywell after working on the sixth floor in an office building in Grand Rapids, and then being up here, it was possible that I could sit and eat a quick sandwich at my desk, jump in my car, run out to Advance, and in those days, the mill was still there, the dam. There were two ponds, one on either side of the road. I could catch a trout on a fly and get back to my desk by 1 o'clock. Now, nothing like that could ever happen if you worked in downtown Grand Rapids. You know, it was just what a huge bonus, What a wonderful thing. I can remember sitting at my desk there, and where Glenn's is, or Family Fair, seeing horses, you know, pasturing in that field. And I can occasionally would see deer walking out there first thing in the morning. But it's changed a lot. It's changed a lot. The railroad, too. I never really had a ride. My son did. My son Tom, his grandpa took him one time, and they did the BF&B, which is Boyne Falls and back, mm-hmm. Of course, kids love that, to have a train ride. And so, anyhow, but it's changed a lot. Yeah, it's changed a lot. Yeah. But one thing that hasn't changed is we still got our 40-year-old penny poker game going. It started with Bill Grimm and Bob Britton and mm-hmm. myself. And it continues every Monday night. We play for 2 hours, 3 penny maximum raise, and you can have one beer through the evening if you wanted. Otherwise, anyhow, it's a pretty friendly game. We just have a good time, So.
Well, it's. What about some of the old characters in town?
Oh, geez, yeah, quite a few.
And the man I'm thinking of is the one that owned the house down here. On the corner, he tarred the house, and then he had the old Rolls Royce that burned up in the house, And he was full of newspapers.
Rocky Record? You think it is? No, that wouldn't be Rocky.
I'm trying to think.
Not Cricket or what they call him. Yeah, I remember that.
Remember
he tarred the roof a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit to protect it, and then when it caught on fire, it burned savagely.
It's
causing great winds, and Tony lived kind of next door to that, or his father was.
Remember Boyd Heaton?
Yeah. Oh yes. Yeah. He used to go hunting with Boyd.
Oh yeah, me too. You know, fox hunting in the middle of the winter. And
that was
I had a good story about the second year I was here, I guess. We went to the Presbyterian church, and one morning church was over, and we're outside, and everybody's lighting up a pipe or a cigarette or something. And Art Speltz, an old guy who was mayor of Boyne at the time, and we got talking about trout fishing, and he said, "You want to go trout fishing opening day?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'll take you." He said, "Be at my house in the morning." And he said, "I don't know, 8 o'clock or something." So I got up early that morning, and got my tackle all together, and had breakfast, and went over to his house in North Boyne, and he and his wife had no children. They were so glad to see me. Come on in, you know, and they set me down at the table, and she had pancakes and eggs and sausage and fried potatoes and everything you could think of, you know. I sat and ate a whole nother breakfast. So we go out, and I said, "Art," I said, "I got my stuff in my car. I'd be willing to drive." "No, no," he said. "Get in and roll the window down." He had a great big old car. I don't know what it was, but it was a big old boat, you know. And I got in, the passenger, rolled the window down. He handed me 2 long cane poles. He said, "Hang on to these." And away we go. And he drove like a maniac. And we go out through Horton Bay and go on up to Church Road and then down the hill to the creek. There were a couple other cars there, too. But we got out, and he carried a pole, and he had some worms and so on. And he said, "Now, this is all quicksand. They've lost cows in here. You have to step exactly where I step. We're stepping on submerged logs." He said, "Be very careful. Follow me." And away we went. We went maybe 100 yards at the most downstream. And we got to a point where the creek is quite wide, but you can see a channel out in the middle of all green watercress. And there's a groove of open space between it. And he said, "Flip your worm right out there." And I did. 20 minutes later, we were on our way back home with 2 limits, all brook trout, you know. Oh. It was just a slam dunk thing, but anyhow, that was kind of fun. And I've never gone back there. I've never trusted my footing. I've fished there from the road a few times, mm-hmm. and I've turkey hunted. I've called the birds and had them respond, but never killed one there, but anyhow.
What about your memory of the tanner? The tannery.
Oh, the tannery, yeah. We always held our nose going by it, you know, when I first built this house before the road was changed. But, yeah, Rudy Jacobson, remember him? He was a CEO of the tannery. He and I think 3 of us from Honeywell got together. We formed the first credit union that was ever in this town. And so at Honeywell, you could go see, remember the girl in shipping? She ran the whole shipping department near the back door. Tuffy girl. But anyhow, she was the agent, and if you wanted to borrow some money, you went to see her, and you make monthly payments or weekly payments or whatever, you turn them into her. And you know, it really benefited a lot of people. And the name continued to change and continued to grow. Finally, they had an office next to Glenn's, and later, of course, they changed the forefront and became an affiliate of a whole lot of other forefronts. But we really, the whole thing originated at the tannery in the office there, in the dark. Yeah.
So do you have recollections of what it was like in the theater during those days?
Yeah. Joe... Anyhow, he got into a streak where he showed X movies and just about run him out of town on a rail, you know. But people tolerated it. City, and he was serving on the city commission at the time. And it was a really touch-and-go, delicate situation. Nobody wanted to really criticize him because at the same time, he originated all the trees in our downtown. He came up with this idea of getting some concrete out of the way and planting trees, which are still there. It was a heck of a good idea. Beautified the town, especially as years go on. It's nicer and nicer all the time. And it's great at Christmas time. They hang all the lights and so on. He had that vision, and people were hesitant to criticize him because of that. You remember that.
Well, that's, I think Deep Throat was kind of like his end. That kind of brought it to a screeching halt.
Maybe. Some of it was really, really raw stuff,
Well, that's some of the city fathers that would amazingly tell you what the movie was like, but they wouldn't see this for the life.
Right,
they managed to.
Well, so if it says Triple X, it was, just leave it alone.
Just interesting.
Yeah.
Did you know of any of the major acts that might have come to the old theater?
Well, the high school kids, the drama department put on several year-end plays. They're in that facility, and it was a good place for that. And both of my daughters performed through that as they, became seniors and so on. Yeah, I at one time, when it was kind of in disrepair and disuse, he contacted me and he gave me a sketch of a little table that would fasten to the armchair. He figured that's a place to put pizza and drinks, and so we had a hole in it to hold a cup. It was a cup holder and a place for the pizza. And I must have made 20 of them in the shop for him or something. I don't know if they ever got used or not, but it's a novel idea. And he didn't hesitate to risk some money. He was a risk taker. Yeah.
What about the general population?
I think the numbers have been pretty stable over the years, haven't they? We're still around 33,000, 3,500. That really hasn't changed. I know the outline beyond the city limits has really increased, but...
Well, and a lot of the records I'm reading recently, oddly, are about the students in the area, how many students were actually enrolled in schools and all of the wards collected. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's kind of what, when I start thinking about the population, I think about that specifically. I mean, did you see much of that? It was a long time before a millage came about so that the high school was then, created and starting to be built upon.
Ann Thurston spent $12 million of our dollars, and some of us were just aghast. Holy moly, when are we ever going to pay this? $12 million? But anyhow.
And that's for this,
happened. Now
this high school?
I think we're in Hock a whole lot worse than that at this point, but yeah.
And was it just one person's recommendation
to
do
that? Well, she was
really
on the school board and had some influence, and she went to our church, and I dearly loved her. She was a wonderful woman. I did her kitchen when they built a new home, and did some remodeling in her old house before. I knew him quite well, but she was very liberal with our tax dollar. and it's funny because seems like you don't have a lot of say in it. You can vote no, but the thing went through, and bang, 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 there goes the money. But anyhow, a wonderful facility. I've been to several events at the Performing Arts Center, and it's just top notch. Right on par with Charlevoix and every other place I've been. One of the highlights of my years, I guess, is one day I'm sitting having lunch, and my daughter walked through the kitchen, and she said, "Dad, I'm going to the library. You want anything?" I said, "See if they got any books on beekeeping. My grandpa used to keep a few bees." She brought a big, thick book home, and I read it all and ordered from Sears catalog, I ordered two packages of bees. And I mentioned to my fuel oil delivery man that I had some bees. He said, "My dad was a commercial beekeeper. Tell you what," he said, "I'll install the first two for you if you will in turn pass it on, pay it forward, and install for someone else." So I got myself the white suit, the head net, and gloves, and all the equipment that and got ready, and finally the post office called and said, hey, your bees are here. They would really like me to get them out of there as quick as I could. So some of them were on the outside of the cage, of course. Oh. So, you know, a little container, but there would be maybe 6,000 or 8,000 bees inside there, plus a queen in a separate little box. And
wow.
So I did that, and I managed to multiply, and I ended up with 18 colonies, because if you will just buy new queens each year, you can double, you know, it's a geometric progression. You can double every year, so if you get up to 8 the next year, you can be 16. So one of my students, Henry Lentz, remember Henry?
Mm-hmm.
He was a science teacher at school, and he took my class in beekeeping when I started teaching, and he didn't pay real good attention because he called me one day and he said, hey, my bees are up in the apple tree. What am I going to do? I went over, and yeah, he had the queen excluded in the wrong place, and the colony had gotten crowded. So I took several pictures, and I had my saw with me, and I cut the branch off that had all the bees clustered on it, and I brought an extra hive body, and I gave it one good shake, and they all dropped in, and closed it up and waited about a half hour, and then went in and checked it carefully with the smoker and made sure I had the queen. And then that night after dark, I put a piece of screening across the entrance and got it in my truck and brought it home, you know, and for another colony. So, but anyhow, it's the only hobby I've ever made any money at. I mean, photography, I had my own dark room for a while, and, you know, archery and all of these things that we love to do, but they all cost money, except the bees. We had a jar on the counter called Honey Money, and every time we'd sell, you know, the money going there, and we took trips to Seattle and San Diego and all over, you know. Surprising how much money accumulated from honey sale. they were selling my honey at the Advance store, the Deer Lake store, the Wilderness State Park, Young State Park, I think in one place in Boyne Falls, a little store in the corner. And it's surprising, and then the calls would come in, hey, we're almost out of honey, bring us another box, and which would be 24 jars, you know. So, yeah, that was a fun thing. But I ended up teaching in Bel Air and Onaway and Harbor Springs and Petoskey and Boyne here. So I taught five different places. And the first year I would teach a beginner class, and second year was more advanced. And I had the Bel Air class, I had quite a few orchard owners that were kind of tired of paying beekeepers renting their colonies for pollination in the spring, and they were wondering how much they would have to invest to have their own bees, you know. So, yeah. So anyhow, that was a nice adventure, but one of the drawbacks there, in order to be a beekeeper, at one point in the year, you have to be able to lift 100 pounds. And once I had back surgery, the doc says, 25. I said, God, my dog weighs more than that. 25. Yeah. That's your limit. So you've been there, you know what I mean. Yeah.
Is that every hive is 100 pounds, or is it just that you have to lift 100 pounds
one time?
No, pretty much
everyone, yeah. Late in the year, you have to remove the queen excluder. In order to do that, the upper boxes are really heavy. They're full of honey. And the one, which would be a 100-pounder, you need to leave for the bees for the winter. So you've got to set that aside, get the queen excluder out of the way, and put it back, you know. So at one point, I had a notice about a seminar for beekeeping instructors that would be held in Madison, Wisconsin. In the school, I inquired, and they said, oh, yeah, we'll pay your expenses. Go ahead to do that. And my wife and I went over, and it was really, it opened up all of their library, film libraries and slides and movies and all the resources that I could use in teaching. It was really, really helpful. Yeah.
And as you've noticed some of the guns here, Bob may not claim it, but he is a rather good gunsmith, and I believe you made that.
I made that one, and I made it one of the the 45 caliber muzzleloader in there too. Yeah, it's, spent a whole winter on that one, started from scratch. And
that's beautiful.
Gary Mapes, your buddy Gary Mapes. Did you see that picture with Gary's buck mm-hmm. on the wall there? Yeah. Have you got a copy of that too?
I would love a copy of it. Yeah. One of the things that kind of is a little bit almost warm like family. When Bob left the Scouts, I stayed there for a while, and then one of my old Scout leaders, Gary Mapes, has stayed and helped me at many different times, and he was one of my old Boy Scouts, and he also worked with Bob, and I believe Gary made his own job.
Yeah.
With Bob's help.
When I took over, Gary was the oldest boy in the troop, and we just kind of bonded, and I followed him through college. One time I'm coming through home and through Big Rapids, and here he's standing on the corner with his thumb out with a girl, you know, and I looped the block and picked him up. But when he moved up here and started his video rental business, he came to me and needed cabinets and countertops, and we started hunting together, and I had permission for some property up in Norway near Iron Mountain. And I could take my trailer up there and had a key to the gate and through this hayfield and back and into the woods. And oh God, there were bear, turkeys, deer. It was a wonderful place. And yeah, I don't know how many seasons we'd go up in the spring on turkeys. We'd go in the fall for turkeys and deer. And we had some adventures. Yeah. Yeah. And some of them were bears. Pretty close too, but anyhow.
Yeah, we had some good times.
We sure did, yeah. And you know, Gary is here in my living room almost once a week or every 2 weeks, bringing me magazines. We trade books back and forth, reading material. He keeps an eye on me all the time. He just bought property in Florida in the same park that my wife and I were in for 15 seasons, so. And it's a park where my dad was retired in. In his day, if you didn't have an Airstream trailer, they wouldn't let you in. It was an all Airstream park. And then, of course, Airstreamers started dying off, and so they finally agreed to let SOBs, which is some other brand.
Were you in the group of the canoers with Litzenberg?
No, that was Bill Christensen. You know, he's in bad shape right now, too, but, yeah.
Yeah, it was
No.
Did you ever join any of the fraternities? Any of the fraternities in town? No?
No, I served 11 years on the board of Habitat for Humanity,
mm-hmm.
and used my builder's license to pull permits on the first aid houses. So did that. I served on Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Taught Sunday school. Did a lot of different things like that. You know, it's 25 years on the Housing Commission as a volunteer.
Wow.
Yeah, I was president for a long time. And that's such a blessing to so many seniors, not just seniors, but so many struggling families, young families,
Absolutely.
It was a real blessing, real ministry. But all you can do is set an example, and some will follow and some will ignore. Anyhow.
Well, Bob has set an example for years and very quietly done a lot of things. But so you ask somebody, Bob Plooster, yeah, I think I know him, but who is he? And he's one of the quiet people behind a lot of things in this town. And he's gained respect from a lot of people for it.
I served on the committee when we had the bicentennial. That was kind of interesting.
Was that the year that they did a lot of reenactments and mm-hmm. the ghost walk
those? Yeah, we did all kinds of stuff, yeah. Yeah. I built part of the float, built a big birthday cake out of foam. That went up on top. In fact, I think it's still in the rafters in the garage. I don't know what to do with it.
Who was the gentleman that had the newspaper store that now is a barber shop?
Oh, Dave Wilson. You think
no,
of Dave?
That he had the barbershop.
He was a barber. This is,
he had a newsstand. Always.
Oh, Irving.
Bob Irving. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you know anything about him or work with him at all?
I bought all my pipe tobacco there.
Okay.
Yeah, once in a while a magazine or something, but he was a really good guy. Yeah.
Quite a character.
Yeah, enjoyed him. He was a, yeah.
Did you have any interface with John Tallboy?
I did John's kitchen, and it's kind of interesting. When John passed away, somehow or other, Pastor Bob Fallman inherited a radio-controlled sailboat. Now, I had one in Florida, and we had everybody wanted to in the park. It was kind of a club of radio-controlled sailing, and we raced 2 days a week, and some took it really, really seriously, and others were there just for the hell of it, you know. But anyhow, I got some trophies from, you know, racing and winning some races and stuff. But anyhow, my sailboat was 1 meter long, about, what, 39 inches or something. And this one was about a six-footer that Pastor Bob inherited. And he would talk to me at church, and he said, what do I do? What, you know, and finally, he said, what if I bring it over to your shop and you see what you can do with it? And he did. Rob Groberg would have been proud of the innards in that thing. It was, oh my gosh, limit switches and all kinds of unnecessary stuff, you know. So I did some engineering, some calculating about the square inches of sail compared mm-hmm. to the one I had in Florida and how much torque the main sail servo had and what I needed to handle the big one. And I proportioned everything and ordered the parts and put the whole thing together. And then Bob and I, it was so darn big, you couldn't transport it. Even in the back of a pickup truck, you had to take the masts and sails off to get it because it was, you know, just so huge. So we took it out to the far end of Deer Lake. And he rolled up his pant legs and went barefoot and took it out to where the keel wasn't dragging anymore and let her go. And he sailed it way out there and sailed it all the way back and was just delighted. And now every time his grandkids are here, they go sailing. I mean, he grew up in Glen Lake and sailed since he was 2 years old or something, but intimately familiar with sailing. But he gets such a kick out of this radio-controlled model, you know. It's a fun thing to do. But anyhow, I was able to help him through that and
well, that's good.
Do some engineering on it. And,
yeah. No, John was one of the people that protected our clock,
mm-hmm.
the old Boyne clock.
Yes, right.
And that was quite a history on that clock if you track back.
Mm-hmm.
The old clock winders, the Garys.
Yeah, I worked in his home there for 4 or 5 days. I got refaced and put new countertops in, and I don't remember us talking very much about that. I think he was working on something in the other room most of the time, so I didn't get a chance to really ask him a lot of questions. I am curious about the town clock, though, and what mechanism and how old it is and what it takes to keep it running and how often it's got to be lubed and cleaned and all this stuff. You know, I don't know. Anyhow, interesting subject.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And what a good guy. What a good guy. Just like our sheriff that passed away recently, you know.
George Lasseter.
Yeah,
yeah.
Good guys.
Yep, that's a lot of history there.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah.
And it's strange the way the history of Boyne City and the area connects. They were, I don't know if you remember when they put the new launch out for the Ironton Ferry on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought some of the pieces down from Mackinac, from the old ferry, to use for ramps. And it was, I went out there and they were working on it. And I looked and I said, you find any barrels with initials on it? He said, yeah. What were the initials? EM. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, mm-hmm, yep. Mm-hmm. But it's, every place you go, something is tied in together in this town.
Yeah. I don't know if it was an April Fool's thing or what, but on Facebook this morning, they were asking for help at the Ironton Ferry had drifted out into Lake Michigan, and anybody had a snowmobile was invited. They'd pay them $50 to come and help haul it back.
Sounds like Jim Bauman.
It had to be April Fool.
It was. Bob Goodnow. Okay. Bob Goodnow put that out.
Did he? Bob Goodnow?
And I answered him. I said, I assume you were commander at the helm when she was launched.
He's a character. When his wife died, he gave me the project. I had to build an obelisk, really, a tapering tower, you know, with a funny top on it and everything, and did it all out of treated half-inch plywood. But I got in some weird cuts to get this top on it, you know, and had to get out the books again about compound angles and everything, but turned out really nice. Got it all done, and he had it painted, and they used it. I think they had a graveside service or something for his wife, and they used it then. But he was always going to have a granite duplicate made of it, you know, and it hasn't appeared yet. But this is a weird thing when I go out to the little cemetery out on Ridge Road. I got a good sized stone there, and my wife on her side, they said, no charge, we can put an icon on each side. What would you like? And well, we got to do the sewing machine for my wife. She loves sewing. And I said, put a beehive on my side. But to go out there and see your own name on this stone and everything except your death date, it's a little weird. You know? Not scary, but just a little creepy, though.
Makes you realize the mortality of man.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. Yeah. It's not if, it's when. So, anyhow, it's just the reality. But
were you ever involved with the airport in town?
Not really, no. Bill Grimm was. Bill served on the airport board, but no, not really. I took off from it and landed on a lot of times. And we came back from Chicago one night and we intended to land, and all the lights were drifted over with snowdrifts, you know. Couldn't see it at all. And it was a moonlit night, and I said, come on, Jim, you can see that. No. He had a buddy that up at Harbor that made money off of tie-down, you know. So, no, we'll go to Harbor. We go up to Harbor, and their lights are all drifted over. And I said, no, let's go to Pelson. We'll call somebody from the plant, and they'll come get us. No, I can do this, you know. And we're going in, and at that time, they hadn't taken the wires down beside. So we came in from the east, and I'll never forget seeing those power lines about 6 feet under our wheels as we came across the road. And holy moly, that was too close.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Now that's all underground, you know, so don't have to worry about it.
Do you remember anything about the steamers that used to come in here and self-unload the vessels with rock and coal?
I'm still not catching yet.
The steamers that used to come into Ironton.
Yes, definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bringing coal, and they'd come in through the channel of Charleroi and bring coal, yeah.
Did you follow any of those coal fires?
No, not really. What I remember most about that is the ponds that they had, the settling ponds.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring of the year, the carp would come in there pretty good, and it was really fun archery. They were shooting carp with a bow in there, but and I could wade out and shoot carp in front of Honeywell too, mm-hmm. in the shallows there, they'd be there. Remember Todd said he was out on his dock one day and here this arrow comes swimming across. He said it had red feathers on it. He said, what color are you shooting? I said, yeah, red.
Bring back my arrow.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. Robin?
Well, what about other sports? Were you involved in baseball, or did you follow any of the teams here?
Well, I played on our Presbyterian Church softball league, and then later on I coached softball. And when we started wintering in Florida, we started going to Presbyterian Church there, and one year they were advertising in the bulletin. They said, we need somebody to coach and manage our softball team. We're going to do this. They've never, ever had a softball team before. So I volunteered, and it was really interesting the very first night, because I knew a couple of the people from introductions at coffee hours or something, but suddenly I had to learn 9 new names and decide where to put people, including the pastor. Okay, pastor's in second base, and this elderly gal in her 70s, she can be catcher, and you know, all this stuff. And everybody had it down there. They had to pay $25 to be in the league or something. So the first night, this elderly gal, the pitcher was getting tired. I could see that, and she was up to bat. And I said, whatever you do, don't swing. You'll get on base. I need you on base. And she let the first 2 or 3 balls go by. And she said, she came over to me, and she said, I paid my $25. I can run and swing if I want to. Go ahead. And she did. She struck out, of course. But anyhow, it was interesting. It was a challenge for me, though, with the names. And I managed it. I was proud of myself. I didn't call the wrong people the wrong names in once. that was my son made it to the cross-country finals all 4 years of high school. And we had a secret weapon. I was keeping bees at the time. And I'd read some articles, and so I trapped pollen. I had a pollen trap in one of my colonies. So every morning, I'd take a teaspoon of fresh bee pollen and stir it in his orange juice. And it really, really helped his, you know, he was running 3 miles, but his endurance was wonderful. I remember one race in Petoskey where he was a whole city block ahead of the whole rest of the pack. He was way, way out in front. So anyhow, he did really well with that. So.
Did your bees, or when you were doing bees, did you ever make royal jelly?
No, you don't make royal jelly.
I've heard the term. I don't know what it means.
It's the substance that they feed to a larva to make that larva hatch into a queen.
Oh.
Okay, it's an extremely nutritious stuff. And if they discovered that the old queen is failing, that she's not hitting all the cells with eggs, missing some, and the egg pattern isn't real solid, the bees themselves will say, oops, time to replace her. And so they'll find one cell near the bottom of the frame. I've got a whole slideshow on that. And they'll feed that royal jelly, and it'll develop, it'll look like a peanut hanging down. And that will hatch out into a queen.
Wow. And where does the royal jelly come from?
Well, it comes from the head of the worker bees. They secrete it. Yeah. When I was teaching over in Onaway, I was going through the biology of bees, and I made the statement that drones have no father. And one of the ladies in my class kept chickens. She could not accept that statement. No. That can't be. It won't work that way. It cannot happen. But actually, it does. You know, when the queen lays an egg, the bees, the worker bees, decide what that egg will be. If they feed it normal, it's another worker bee. But if they feed it differently, it'll develop into a drone. And what happens is the queen actually lays fertilized or unfertilized eggs. She makes that decision as she lays it. And so if she lays an unfertilized egg, that's a drone, which means there is no father for that.
And the drone's responsibility
is? The drones are the boys. All they do is mate with the queen or try to. You know, when a new virgin queen is flying, circling in the air on her mating flight. Yeah.
To be a father that didn't have a father.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that weird or what?
It is weird.
Yeah. But it's part of the biology of the honeybee, yeah.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. Did you get involved at all with the yachting out here? With yachts, sailboats?
I've had a ride on Pastor Bob's boat one night with him. One of the guys at the Harbridge Park invited me when I was telling him about all the radio control boats in Florida. Oh, you come, you know, and he called me one Sunday afternoon. Come down to slip number so-and-so. And we sailed out to Advance and turned around and came back. And I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a ride, you know, on a full-size sailboat. And Sheehan, you know, Sheehan that lives in the Harbridge Park. But anyhow, I have done every countertop in every one of the cottages in Harbridge Park, except number 1, I guess. Yeah, Ray Zabeski did the very first one, and after that they called me, and I've done every one since. And the last several have been granite, and I've just subbed them out. You know. But they wanted me as their countertop guy. I had the responsibility. So even for the granite ones, I would present the granite people with my drawing of exact dimensions of what how I wanted it, some rounded corners or angled corners and all this stuff. So, yeah. Pretty simple engineering geometry. No brainer.
But a crew to help haul and carry, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Good crew of strong arms. Mm-hmm.
That's mandatory as you get on in age.
Yeah.
You want it moved? Help yourself.
Right. This week, Monday, the girl fixed me a piece of fish for supper. I got these healthcare workers. You know. Anyhow, and she baked it in the oven, wrapped it in foil and baked it. And later that night, she came to me and she said, I can't get that oven to turn off. I said, maybe you turned the self-clean thing on or something. And we checked everything, kept hitting the off button, and the burner's still red hot in the bottom of the oven. So finally I had her pull the circuit breaker out in the garage. Next night I had her flip the breaker and let's see if it reset, and I hit the off button and heard a beep, which it wouldn't do the day before. And I said, I think we got it. In another 10 minutes here, this thing is glowing again. So I started calling around for appliance repair people. It's a Sears appliance, and they give you a number on the back of their literature, and you talk to somebody in Hong Kong or Taiwan or something, you can't understand them, and they want $119 to send somebody out to look at it. And I finally got a hold of, in this Tri-Lakes appliance, you know, out of Petoskey, I get a recording from them that because they can't find enough help, they're no longer servicing Petoskey. They're doing Harbor, Alanson, Cross Village, Mackinac City. They won't go south of the north city limit of Petoskey. So I got hold of one in Gaylord. Nice people, very polite and everything. And I said, is it possible to talk to your repair guy? Yeah, well, we'll send him out, $119 or something. I said, "What? Can I talk to him?" Yeah, so she, pretty soon the guy called and I can hear, they're going down the road and I can hear his buddy talking to him. And I talked to him some and he said, he said, if I can get the part, it's going to be $350 for the controller. We charge $260 labor to put it in. And geez, I already priced up for $700 to $800. I could buy a whole brand new one. I don't really need a self-clean oven. I don't need a glass top. And so anyhow, he said, call our girl back at the office and give her your model number. And when I get back there, I'll look it up. And about an hour later, the girl called me and she said, I'm sorry, Bob, but that's over 20 years old and no parts are no longer available. You got scrap metal. You know, so I called up to the Habitat Restore and I got a beautiful range for $50.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine is going to pick it up on his truck on Tuesday and they're going to bring it here. And Friday night I had my helper girl pull my old one out and clean everything behind it. And so we're all slick ready for the replacement for $50.
Nice.
And Habitat said, I said, do you guys deliver? And they said, no, but we can give you contact information of a delivery service. So they called themselves two brothers in a truck.
Mm-hmm.
I called them and I said, what would you charge me to bring a range from the Habitat store to Boyne City? Oh, $250. I said, no, thank you. Have a good day. $250.
Wow.
No. People are ripping us off on purpose.
I got a Subaru.
Either that or our
I'll
money
put it
has,
in the back of my car.
Our money has devalued way more than what the government is telling us about. I don't know, but anyhow.
Well, just to try to quickly break it down, some Harbor Springs to here in a truck, you probably got $20 in gas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you figure it's a 2-hour round trip for two men and they're making $25 an hour, that's $100.
Mm-hmm.
there's, you know, it just, yeah. it's, it adds up. It yeah, really does. It
doesn't add to 250.
No,
but they've already doubled what it really should be.
Yeah, but you, yeah. you look at it in perspective today, liability insurance. You don't want to talk about that anymore.
Yeah, I know.
It's, I remember the getting off the Staten Island Ferry when I was in the service mm-hmm. and going into the bar, and a shot and a beer was 25 cents.
Yeah.
And today, you can't get a shot and a beer for a $5 bill.
Not even.
It's everything has gone up.
But other than that, it's going pretty good.
Yeah. yep.
Other than that, yeah.
So, back to your bees. Where did you keep all these hives?
Oh, I'm down in the far corner of my property. My lot here is 500 feet deep.
Oh.
And it's a funny story. When the builder was putting his house up, I had Ed Robinson for the plumber. Mm-hmm. He did all the plumbing, had the fixtures in. The very last thing he's going to do is put the septic and drain field in. So he calls the health department, and they come out with their post-hole digger and poured water in the hole. They came back the next day and the water's still there. And they said, this doesn't perk. This is like, you can make pottery out of this soil. You know, it's heavy clay. You don't own enough property to have a drain field or a septic here.
Oh.
So I thought, oh, this is a disaster. I was careful to have the well drilled before we started the construction, you know. And I hadn't thought, you know, the plumber should have been maybe one of the first things he did, you know. So I started nosing around, and I found at the bottom of my hill in the far corner of my property with a shovel, I'm hitting gravel and then sand. I said, wonderful, perfect soil conditions. I said, talk to the plumber. I said, have them guys come back and try down here. And they came back, oh, yeah, here you only need 20, 30 feet or something, not a whole lot, you know. So I remember I spent that year Labor Day with an axe mostly, and I chiseled through a lot of roots because this was all heavily wooded side hill before it was, you know, clear cut, and lots of roots. And anyhow, I cut a channel for plastic pipe all the way, almost 300 feet long. And anyhow, and they put the drain field in down there. And the septic tank is out where my arbor is, out just past the backyard. But anyhow, but that.
Wow.
Down there was far enough from the building that I wasn't too worried about visitors, you know, being stung or being bothered by my bees. You got a lot of bees, you know, you got 60,000 times 18 colonies, a lot of bees, you know.
Wow.
Well, the bees, of course, dispersed themselves. I also always kept an up-to-date emergency bee sting kit in my refrigerator, and Dr. Mansfield would give that readily, you know, when he knew I was a beekeeper. And I paid attention to the expiration date and would pitch it and get a fresh one. And yeah, never had to use it.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the old Boy Scout motto, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be prepared.
Really?
I just finished one of Gary's books that he brought me. And the author there is a doctor, a bow hunter, and he attributes the be prepared to the Girl Scouts. And I thought, no, wait a damn minute, no, the Boy Scouts. Really? This guy thought the Girl Scouts came up with that?
Yeah. Credit where credit is due, please.
Well, that's, to the best of my knowledge, Lord Baden-Powell was not a girl.
No, not even close.
I don't know, but the town is... I came here in 62,
mm-hmm.
and it's certainly changed in these years.
Yeah, yeah. Not the same town, but if you stay in your own little corner and mind your own business, you're okay, you know.
What about when you were working with the Boy Scouts, did you do camping and fishing and rivers or anything like that, boating, canoeing?
I got a thumb drive that you got to take with you, okay? Connie Shearer put it together. I've had it on my regular tape, you know,
mm-hmm.
for a long time, and she converted all my tapes to, I can't believe, I mean, I got 8 videotapes all in this thumb drive, and I can plug them in like, you know how to use the thumb drive? And okay, yeah. I'm going to send that with you, and you can take your time looking this over, but it's just wonderful. Yeah, there'll be pictures in that of kids holding trout over at Weber Lake. They build a bridge across Warner Creek. They build a rope bridge, and then later on a regular stick bridge. We camped out there several years in a row. I had permission from the property owner. We did some fishing.
Did you ever get down into the Jordan River?
We never did that. We took our canoe, but always at Weber Lake over east of Muldoon.
In later years, we used the Jordan Valley.
Yes.
For camporees, yeah. with the Canadians.
Right.
It was just a good time. A lot of good people.
Yeah.
From both sides, and it's.
I got to tell you a story about how Deer Meadows got its name. Okay, I was serving on the Housing Commission. I was president, and we had this project coming up. We're going to build Deer Meadows, but we needed a name for it. The architect wanted a name. The document people wanted it. They were bugging us for a name. So we put a little blurb in the paper. We said, we got a naming contest. We'll offer $100 to anyone that would come up with a name for this project that is likable to 3 out of our 5 commissioners, a majority. It's all we want, a simple majority. And month after month, we had names submitted, but no 3 people on the board would buy them. And one morning, I had to meet a semi real early in the morning out east of town, and I'm going by down Division Street, and I happen to look out there where we're going to build, and there's some deer. And it popped into my head, Deer Meadows. And so the next meeting, I said to the board, what say we call it Deer Meadows? And everyone said, yeah.
That's neat.
That's where it came from.
Where'd you spend the $100?
I didn't get it. One of the things as a commissioner, you're not allowed to profit at all from the project. So we never spent the $100.
That's great.
So not only did we come up with a good name, but we saved $100. And
well, it's
so there's a story.
Did you ever like bowl? Were you a bowler? Any of those kinds of crazy sports?
No, in high school, I think I was on the bowling team, but I remember a part-time job setting pins in those days. And after you got them set, you curled up in the corner, and these big farmers would just throw it as hard as they could, and you would go home all with a lot of bruises and. I miss, at one point when we were living in Chicago yet, before I moved to Michigan, I was bugging my dad. In an Outdoor Life magazine, there were ads in the back, and one of them was Northwest School of Taxidermy out in Omaha. And boy, that appealed to me. I'd like to learn how to do taxidermy. And I bugged my dad, look at that, you can get these lessons. And he looked at me and shook his head, and he said, you got some of the best libraries in the world. He said, go to the library and ask for a book on taxidermy. I did. I read a couple books on taxidermy, and I started doing it. So one night after bowling, setting pins at the bowling alley, coming home all beat up, I come in the house, and it was 11, 12 o'clock or something. My mom says, she said, some guys were here. They left a big owl on the workbench for you downstairs. I said, all right, I'll look at it tomorrow. I thought, well, I better look at it now. And I went down, and it's in a paper bag, and the feet and the tail are sticking out. And I grabbed the 2 feet and slid the bag off, and the thing is blinking at me. And I looked around, and my dad's hammer was laying there. And I clunked it with the hammer, and it flopped a few minutes, and
wow.
It was done. But I ended up making a nice mount out of it, a beautiful bird to mount. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Was he knocked out?
Well, I don't know. They shot it, they were crow hunting, and they wanted to use it. They didn't want any base. They just wanted 2 wires coming out that they could stick in a fence post and use it as a decoy, for more crow hunting.
Oh, my gosh.
that was a little surprising.
I was dead, but I got better.
Whoops.
Oh, my.
Well, we've I've enjoyed this. Bob, have you got anything else you want to add to us?
Well, not that I could say in public, right. No.
Oh, shoot. Wait, there's got to be another question at least.
Well, I keep thinking of, you know, some of these strange things, but...
Okay, so parades. Were you ever part of the parades that happened in town?
Were we ever, right?
Oh, yes.
How many times did we walk the boys down the streets, you know? Mm-hmm. That was a scoutmaster's job. You couldn't shirk that.
Did you lose any? I mean, did you ever come back out of the woods without one?
Oh, the boys? No. Several times I had to bring one home early. They got homesick, they got sick. I remember spending all one night bringing a kid. The mother should have never let... He had his appendix out, and she sent him on this trip up to Wilderness State Park. And God, it was cold, and... He got sick in the night, wanted to go home, and we had to leave our cars 5 miles out and hike in 5 miles. And I had, as soon as I got the camp all settled, I hiked 5 miles again and brought my car in close. Good thing I did, because this kid needed to go in the middle of the night. And we got all the way back to Boyne, dropped him, talked to his parents and everything. I got back, I don't know if I even got in my sleeping bag, and it snowed in my pancake batter that morning, so it was kind of cold. But I brought one kid home from the Jordan Valley. One of Chuck Erman's kids got homesick one night and wanted to come back. Anyhow, you just did what you had to do, you know. Some of it was almost babysitting, but the biggest joy was when a kid finally discovered what the proper consistency of pancake batter was and how you needed a hot pan to put it in. And the first time he went to turn one over and it was beautifully brown on the other side, that kid is going to stay there for the next 3 hours and feed everybody in camp. He's turned on to making pancakes. He suddenly can do it, you know?
Oh, man.
Wow. That was such a joy. I mean, that was a teaching, a hands-on teaching. You can read them all the books you want and say, go look on page such and such, but there's nothing like doing it with them and instructing them through the steps.
Well, that's when we were using the Bill Batiste's trucks to transport the boys.
Yeah, that was up at the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you had all those long poles. You're going to love seeing this movie. On this thumb drive, you're going to enjoy
Bill Batiste ran the, what was the store? The Bill Batiste ran here.
Oh, he had the surplus.
Commodity store.
Surplus cheese and stuff.
And he had three trucks with
big box trucks with
chain gate and canvas in the back. Uh-huh. We'd load the kids in there, pull the chain gate across, leave the canvas up, and they'd do God knows what in the back of that truck as we drove someplace.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And it was...
right up to the bridge.
There.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was
you
a good old
tell
days.
Us now, right? Yeah. Because the cops can't get you now.
And then you did that pig pile thing where the kids mm-hmm. all piled onto you and tried to pin you to the ground.
Yep.
And you'd have 15, 20 kids on top of you. And
oh
you're
my
throwing
gosh.
Them off. Then they were all calling up on the tower. Some of them were jumping into your arms, you're catching them. Some of the smaller kids.
You used to have a blast. This was the difference of a scoutmaster from America to a scoutmaster in Canada was night and day. The Canadian scoutmaster stayed in full uniform and directed. The American scoutmaster got in the same trouble that his kids did all the time.
Yeah, we housed a Canadian scoutmaster here for a couple nights in the house here.
When we brought them up for the camperies, and the last night they had to find a home for them in Boyne.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're some good people.
Churches? Were you part of any of the churches around here? A church? Did you?
Pedestrian church. Presbyterian.
Pedestrian.
Yeah, I've been an elder, taught Sunday school, all that kind of stuff. So
that's one of the first churches, isn't it?
It probably is, yeah.
Because I remember they were talking about, it was odd, but They were talking about the first graduation service in 1888, and they'd handled that first commencement there. Mm-hmm. The outdoor commencement for the rest of the class was 2 weeks later, but they actually did that right inside that church.
Right. Well, high school graduation in Boyan, there were four people, and Lulu and Minnie Morgan were two of the graduating class.
Mm-hmm.
And they were from the Morgan family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she was also the valedictorian or whatever the...
Yeah, it was... Boyan City developed very well as a bilingual and bicultural town. Because you had many languages spoken in Boyan City when the town developed. You had some French, you had German, you had Dutch, you had Slavic languages, you had a Russian settlement in Boyan Falls. So you just consider this and the mix we had to start this town. Mm. And today, all they're doing is playing the mixed card.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame.
We had an exchange student that lived with us for 11 months, I guess she was here. And she was just the age between my two daughters. It was quite an experience. So that year, as soon as school was out, I had made arrangements to rent a motorhome out of Grand Rapids, and we drove down there with a trunk full of luggage and piled it all in a motorhome. And that motorhome owner had two 10-speed bikes strapped on the back, and we took off for Yellowstone. And this German girl, you know, were day after day after day going across the plains, and funny about the fourth day, she said, "Dad, how big is this country? We're not even to California yet." You know, she had skied. Well, both her parents were doctors, physicians, so they had live-in maids. She'd never made a bed. She'd never washed the dishes before she came here. So we assimilated her and taught her all of these things. She did the same chores the other girls did. Anyhow, we had quite. It was a good experience. You're going to get dog kisses from that one.
Sure.
Her name's Sweetheart. So.
For those of you who can't see, Ed's got his arm around her neck, making nose-to-nose contact.
Yeah.
Well, it does sound like a fun group, a neat era that you've survived here in Boyan City.
Yeah, well, Bob is proof that you don't need to be a loud noise to do a good job, and we both enjoyed town, working with people, helping people,
trying to
keep people out of trouble occasionally.
Frank Shaler,
yeah,
one of our scouts, you know, that guy is amazing. I had one time, 2 months ago or something, I thought I was having trouble with my furnace, and I called the gas company, and they sent two guys out on a Sunday morning or something, and after an hour, they came back up the steps, and they said, "Good news, bad news. Good news is your furnace is working fine. Nothing wrong with that." But he said, "We had to turn your water heater off because the pipe going to the chimney is all falling apart. It's all rotted out." So we turned it off, you know. So my son up at Bay Shore, he said, "Dad, here's the name of a plumber that I use. They're $140 an hour out of Harbor Springs, and you probably can't get hold of them until next week or something," and all this stuff. I got thinking about it, and I called Frank. "Yeah," he come out, take a look at it. "Oh, yeah, I know, I see exactly what we need." He goes down to Ace Hardware and charged $8 on my account, came back, put it back together, lit the thing, and away we go. He wouldn't take a dime. You know, he does this all day, every day, running around helping seniors that need help. He never charges anything. He's got a buddy that's also part of the Catholic Church, I guess, what they call themselves, the men's group in the Catholic Church, the Knights of Columbus. And you know, there's buddies from Boyan Falls, and sometimes if it requires two men, they work together, otherwise they go separately. But what a blessing, you know. Instead of having to spend hundreds of dollars for $8, my water heater's running fine again. So
Well, as the community grew, you learned to work together.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like when we had a large tree go down alongside my house. I was contemplating getting it done, and the man from the farm across the road, I looked up, and here they've got two bulldozers hooked onto it, dragging it into the woods.
It's just, nice, yeah.
The whole area has learned to support each other.
Yeah, you bet.
And it's the...
Mm-hmm. We'll get along with a little help from our friends.
It's a learning curve.
Yeah.
That's the pay it forward part. That's the part we hope folks are picking up on and carrying forward, exactly.
If you ever see the red arrow, that's the order of the arrow.
Oh, that's where his fish went, right? Your fish that was... swimming around with the arrow in it?
No.
Not that?
No, this is a Boy Scout.
That's an honor society of the Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Okay.
Honor camper.
Excellent.
Those you get all done with the meal and your knees are still clean. Because we would quite often we'd do a knee inspection, remember? Yeah, we'd say, all right, everybody stand up and walk down the row and some guys' knees are all muddy. Yeah, could have used a brown cloth there. Could have kept your pants clean and...
We used to have a ball.
Next time, the kid remember that. And simple little lessons like that.
Yeah.
You didn't have to chew anybody out, and just show an example.
Kind of highlighting the positives, and I like that non-judgment curve toward learning.
Yeah. Anyhow, most of it's Ed's fault because he recruited me.
And did you, though? He said you'd have a lot of fun, did you?
Really did.
All right, good call.
Really did. Those are the good old days.
And sometimes you would just stand back and watch, amazed. Look what they did.
Yeah.
Isn't it awful? Yeah, but they did it. It's just and we had good people supporting us.
We really did.
Jimmy Stackus, when we got totally rained out and blown out of the Jordan Valley. He had a brand new, if I remember, it was a big Chrysler wagon, a brand new station wagon. And the word got back into Boyden, Ed needs help with the scouts, and I think you were there at the time. And he drove this wagon out and packed it. He let 8 or 10 kids in their dirty stuff with them, packed into that wagon, and he took off for Boyden. And never, I told him, I said, Jimmy is brand new, and he said, get your kids in here. It was just, and this is the type of people we had.
Yeah.
And Bob and I certainly enjoyed it.
Sure did.
We learned a lot. And I'm thankful.
We learned not to take a gift of a school bus, too.
Yeah.
Who was it? The insurance guy down the street here. Very generous, but he bought an old school bus from the Baptist church. Donated to the scouts. And then we had to pay for one of the assistant scoutmasters to get the chauffeur's license, kind of thing, to be legally do it. Then we needed a mechanic to fix the brakes. And then we needed paper drives to pay for the gas and insurance. And the thing was a money pit.
Yes.
And so we got so we're not going out camping. We're doing fundraising. We're making birdhouses. We're doing everything we can to raise money to support the damn bus. And finally I said, let's get rid of the bus. Wait a minute, you know, get rid of the bus. Parents will get the kids out to the campgrounds if we need it. So anyhow, we learned a lesson that, but it took a year or two, but we learned it.
And we used to meet on top of the old white railroad building.
Oh, no kidding.
The scout hall was on top of the building.
Yeah, it was unnatural. I mean, we had deer heads with neckerchiefs on. We had a knot board on the wall with all the knots. You know, we had a canoe up there, a barrel full of Air Force surplus down mummy bags, sleeping bags that were good to 40 below or something.
Oh my God!
All the equipment and benches for the boys to sit on, corners for their patrols to meet in, and it was just. We hated to give that up.
We would provide.
And Ann Thurston was the one that forced us out of there. She wanted it for making quilts or something, and that lasted 4 months, and they bailed, and then John Gerster took it over as a office space. And
it's just
Rotary always paid the rent for the scouts, and they sponsored our troop. And anyhow,
it was interesting.
Yeah,
and we got to work with the great deal with the scouts out of Boyne Falls.
Oh,
and that was
yeah. Each winter, I would organize and reserve the cabins up at Wilderness State Park, and we would invite Boyne Falls and East Jordan, and sometimes Charlevoix troop,
mm-hmm.
and our troop, and it was a big enough facility. You know, we had a great big huge dining hall and fireplace and meeting rooms and cabins that were heated, you know, for sleeping. And there's some film of us raising, lowering the flag. Richard Crumbaugh played the played taps on his bugle and all this stuff, you know. And
it was a good
two of our boys have turned into ministers. One's a cop, Delaney kid that became a cop in Cadillac. But yeah, Harris Hookwater and Dave Crumbaugh. Dave became a scoutmaster. He was my son's scoutmaster for a few years, and then later became a minister. So.
We had a couple of failures, too. But we gave it the best shot we had.
Yeah. And some have become lifelong friends, like Gary Mapes and Frank Shaler.
It's just, and these are the people that you can call in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And they'll come help you, and you may not have seen them for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
I mean, the last time I saw Bob was down at the Chamber Building in Advance.
Mm-hmm.
And which has been three or four years now. Well, it was before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah, my wife had gone almost 6 years. It would be more than that, so yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, and our wives all work together.
Yeah, that's right, the girls work together at school.
You could.
Yeah.
You know, if I could, I remember.
Well, Pat worked at Honeywell to begin with, didn't she? Yeah.
I remember one time showing up and with a whole load of boys, wet, cold, and the doors opened up and people helped. It's just a good town.
Yeah.
And a lot of good people.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them you have to shake a little bit before they come out of their cage, so to speak.
Yeah.
But they're good people. And the magic thing is you're working with their kids.
Forced me to learn to play guitar a little bit, too.
Did it? I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. One year I got stuck in a Charlevoix hospital. My wife called, and she wasn't driving yet. Hadn't learned. Anyhow, she said, the neighbors are going to bring me out to visit you tonight. Do you want any reading material? And I said, bring me my Scoutmaster handbook. I've always used it as a reference to look up something, but I've never read it really from cover to cover. And I did when I was laying there in the hospital, and it says these kids will sing around a campfire. I said, geez, so I tried it the next time. No, maybe not so much. But I found that if you had a guitar, if you had a little music going, yeah, they'd sing B-I-N-G-O and all these little ditties, you know, all this stuff with campfire songs, and they loved it. So I took guitar lessons up in Petoskey at the music store, and the guy was teaching me the notes and how to read the music and all this stuff. And finally he said, what do you really want? And I said, I need to be able to get my Boy Scouts to sing. And, oh, you need chords, you need this and that. And he started showing me some stuff. And he and several of his buddies were reenactors. And I had the boys out. It was November during deer season. The only place we would camp was in the state park because there was no rifle hunting going on there. It was a safe place for the November outing. As we did religiously, say, one outing a month. You know, take the outing out of scouting and there's not much left. So one outing a month we did. And anyhow, so November we're out there and I'd made arrangements so it's dark, we got the fire going and the kids are all gathered around. And all of a sudden here, out of the dark, out of here come these guys dressed in buckskin and coonskin caps, carrying long guns like this one. And one of them's got a guitar strapped over his bag. And they come in and, hey, boy, make room. We want to sit down with you. And they sit and told a couple stories. And the guy with the guitar gets, you guys know this song? And, oh, we were there till midnight. They loved it. They just loved it, you know. But it was just, the people just came out of the woodwork, you know. And it was kind of a magical night. That, yeah, it was for me anyhow. And I think the boys reacted the same way.
Yeah, a good bunch of kids.
Yeah. One time I had them all up here. What did we do? Oh, it was an emergency thing. So we had a setup where, in an emergency, I would call all the patrol leaders. It would be three or four calls I had to make. They would each call all their boys, and the message is, meet at the scout hall in 15 minutes or something, as quick as you can. And there, there'd be cars waiting. Usually the police car was there with his lights flashing, and they would all come up here, and I would give them all a card which had directions to go 250 feet this way, and then another heading this way, and so far this way. And I had previously, before it snowed, I'd hid a dummy with stuffed clothing up against a tree, so there's a lost person in the woods, injured. You got to find them.
Oh,
and here are the directions to find them. And the first one to find them gets this box of candy bars. And I had it on the pool table in the basement. You know. And they had fun with that. That was before GPS. Now you can just follow your GPS.
Of course, you remember when Harley Burris used to take the scouts out to guide the mushroom pickers?
Yes, right. Chandler Hill.
For the final mushroom hunt, every picker had a scout with them.
And it was Mother's Day, too.
Yeah. And this way, you didn't have somebody stashing mushrooms the day ahead.
Right. No cheating.
And that was,
it was a challenge. Us adults had to fill in. We couldn't get enough boys to do it all, but we did the best we could. And, yeah.
Well, it was good. Mm-hmm. They learned a lot. They learn that some people you trust and other people you learn to trust, and then some people you learn to be careful of. It's just
The first day of the hunt, our task was to go further back in the woods than any of the hunters, stay well ahead of them, keep an eye on your compass, know where you're at, so when you hear the siren blow down on the road, you know, you can herd the people in the right direction. Once in a while you find somebody on a ridge going 90 degrees from where they should, and we'd get them.
Yep.
Yeah. And we weren't allowed to pick any mushrooms ourselves.
No.
I can remember seeing spots, there'd be 100 of them, and maybe I'll come back here sometime, you know.
Ah, a mother load.
And then we used it because we had them in the parades, and it's.
We don't have those kind of mushroom quantities anymore. I mean, I've gone back to that same area year after year. One year they recruited me. Not only did I teach beekeeping, I taught winemaking up at Harbor, and I taught mushroom picking here in Boyne, all adult ed. You know? And the mushroom thing, I spent about an hour in a classroom drawing pictures on the blackboard and talking about the real morels and the false morels and the difference. And how far ahead you need to be looking, and what you're looking for, and all of this stuff. And then the second part of the class was a field trip. So on that Saturday morning, I walked across the road here. There were no houses over there at that point, and I had permission. It was all Montage property. I walked across and went down the first valley and spotted several patches of mushroom, didn't pick any, and came back. So when all the students gathered up here at the end of my driveway, I took my Bible out, had them all put their hand on the Bible, and swear they would never, ever come back to this place again. And they never have. And then we proceeded across, and they all found mushrooms that day.
Oh, that's so cool. Blindfolds, not necessary. A promise is better.
The Bible works for that.
Also, one of the things we used to do was to get the boys integrated with the DNR officer and with the police department so that they weren't afraid of them.
Right, it's comfortable.
I mean, a lot of the boys, well, the dad would say, oh yeah, I was out and the DNR showed up and I had to run.
Yeah. You know,
and this isn't what we want our boys to think.
No.
It's and it worked. Mm-hmm. I think we did good.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're no longer afraid of authority.
Yeah.
And like one of them turned out to be a cop. So.
Measure twice and cut once. Yes.
Yeah.
That worked. That saying fits in so many things. Mm-hmm. Well,
this was a lot of reminiscing. And
well, he's good. I enjoyed asleep, it. So.
Yeah, I think Sweetheart did too. She conked out.
All right, Bob, thank you.
Thank you.
No,
thank you, you guys.
It's our pleasure because we will get you a copy of this.
Okay.
And if you'd like it, I can put on a thumb drive all the interviews the library's done.
I can access them actually on my computer. I've been listening to some. I listened to Jim, you know, from Advance.
Yep. Jim Carlson.
Yeah, Carlson, yeah. I left that organization because he was trying to pick a fist fight with one of the other elderly guys. I think he was the start of Alzheimer's, or he just wasn't. He was acting like a 2-year-old, you know, but I said, we don't need this. You know. We just kind of stepped away. It was a monthly potluck thing. And
we lost the reason for it.
Yes.
And two or three of the families that were been there a long time.
Forever.
Yeah. All thought their way was right and your way was wrong. And
they resented newcomers.
Personality problem.
Very much so.
And they forgot that we were all volunteers. Mm-hmm. Nobody was paid to do this. And yet we've got families beginning to dislike each other. Mm-hmm. And it's too bad, but it was good for a while.
Speaking of Carlson, Kowskin, I can tell you, one year the partridge season opened up 15th of September, and I had an idea. I'd been fishing the Porter Creek, and I slipped down there with my 12-gauge looking for partridge down by the creek, and I kept hearing the spushing, and here comes one of the Carlson kids with boots on the waders, and he's got a spear. And I waited till he got almost from me to away, and the 12-gauge went off. And you talk about somebody walking on water. He never did see me, but that kid was gone. That kid was running like crazy. Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of families grew up here, and a lot of families augmented their meat provided, and they needed to.
And you got to respect that. They needed it. They had it. They had to go hungry. And
this is...
If that's what they're doing. Yeah. It's just to kill things. That's a different story.
Well, there's some people that I've squealed on, turned them in, because they've taken deer and then selling them downstate.
Yeah.
Or selling them to a hunter that comes up here so he can go downstate with driving rights.
That bothers me.
But if somebody knocks a deer down because the family's hungry, I'll help clean it.
Yeah.
It's a different society.
Well, I had one year when I was a legend in my own mind. I took 4 with a bull in one season. Gary and I were up in the UP, and I took a crippled fawn, really a small one, but it was limping, you know. And I took that one up there on a block permit. Didn't really count on my license. But then I'm on the next hill one evening with my camel, and I kind of backed into a thorn apple tree. I had a good feeling there, and as I get towards dark, here comes 6 of them across the road. And I shot, and they all ran off. I stayed right there, and 10 minutes they're back. I shot another one, and they all run off. Next morning I go there, and I found both of them. and they were both bald-headed, but anyhow, so I bought a license for my wife, I guess. And now it gets into November and there's snow, and I put my white camel on one evening and walked across the valley here with a bow and climbed up the next hill and in the same area with all the thorn apples. There's no houses there yet. And that I got to find a buck tonight. I can't shoot another doe. And I'm working through there slow, and I spotted a doe up ahead. And that doe kept looking back like this. And I'm watching, and I hear a buck grunting, you know. And I thought, okay. And all of a sudden, bloom, I hear something running, and it's coming behind me. And I whipped around just instinctively and shot. And I shot him right through the head on a dead run going by me.
Wow.
And when I retrieved it, it was bald-headed. I shot the wrong deer. So I had to call my son up in Bay Shore, and I said, go down to the toll station and buy a deer tag. But I always admired Doc Heaton, because he had one season where he killed two. And a lot of seasons, we killed zero with a bow, you know. And to have one bonanza year like that, geez.
I had a good friend come to the home where we're living now, and he walked in and he said, I got ducks. I said, you got ducks? He said, yeah. Did you have your plug in your gun? Well,
what,
no.
What plug?
And I said, and duck season opens tomorrow. What do I do with the ducks? Said, we clean them before Pat gets home.
They're delicious. You're
in trouble.
Yeah, I'm not going to throw those ducks away. Yeah. It was an honest mistake, but two mistakes at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
And it's... And
then was it lead shot or steel?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Mm. Well, let's... thank you both for helping. We will get copies of these.
Okay.